Welcome to Burr News Current Affairs Podcast with Christopher Famous. Listen at your leisure on www.burrnews.com.
Hi, this is Chris Famous here for Burr News, continuing my series on why is international business important for Bermudians and Bermuda on oil. Today I'm here with Alan and Patrick, and I'll allow them to introduce themselves.
So I'm Alan Pelvang. I'm the General Counsel and Head of the Bermuda Office for Fidelity International, and I've been here 12 years.
12 years. So how do you like it so far?
I'm loving it.
What do you love most about Bermuda?
The people.
Very good. Good answer.
Nice.
There you go.
All right. And my name is Patrick Tanick, and I've been here for 50 plus years.
Showing your age.
Yeah. And I'm actually the CEO of XL Catlin's Insurance Operations and also the chairman of AVIC. Thank you for having me here today, Chris.
Thank you. So briefly, just explain to people what is AVIC for those who don't know.
AVIC stands for the Association of Bermuda International Companies.
Okay, very good. So for the average Bermudian who may not know or not fully cognizant, why would you say IB is important for Bermuda?
So you should answer that, Patrick.
I should answer that, okay. Well, international business contributes about 80% of the gross domestic product, and that's been phenomenal when you put it in perspective of what it was back in 1980 when it represented probably less than 10% of the gross domestic product. It's really evolved over the last 30 years to be a major contributor to the gross domestic product of the government. And it touches every single person on the island, whether you're a taxi driver, whether you work in hospitality, whether you work in utilities or services, it touches every single person.
Okay, and what would you say to that question?
Well, it's a cornerstone of the Bermuda economy, and we've had conversations at ABIC that one of the messages that we want to convey is that international business is part of Bermuda, rather than just something that stands on the side as a contributor to Bermuda. There are so many people here who either work directly for international business or work in businesses or industries that are effectively supporting and living off international business thriving and doing well. And that's very much part of the message that we're trying to get out there, that IB is Bermuda.
So to encapsulate, you would say is as Bermudian as fish cakes now.
I couldn't have said it better.
I'm just saying that's part of our culture. There's no Easter without fish cakes, right? So there's no Bermuda without IB at this point in time.
I would concur with that.
Unless we find gold or something like
that.
Well, you know, one of the things we'd like to see is we'd like to see where there's some diversification of the revenue stream. But for right now,
oh, you're going into dangerous topics there.
No, I'm not going into dangerous topics. I mean, you know, the fact of the matter is that, you know, not to be condescending, but the bottom line is that at this point, international business is one of the major drivers of the Bermudian economy. Mm-hmm. And that's a fact.
So when someone looks around, they walk up and down Bermudiana Road, or they see so-and-so Reed, so-and-so Bliss, why are these companies actually here in Bermuda, beyond the people and the sunshine and the fish cakes?
So let me answer that. So Fidelity has been in Bermuda for coming up to 50 years. So we were one of the very early international businesses setting up here. And we've been here for a few key reasons. A very attractive regulatory and tax environment, and a stability that has helped serve our business well.
So, Mr. Tanis, what do we in Bermuda, whether we're Bermudians, non-Bermudians, guest workers, what do we as a community have to do to ensure that we maintain our present level of international business and hopefully help it to grow?
Well, let me just reframe that question and with this type of response. you know, there's a lot of misinformation out there about international business, which is one of the reasons why we've launched this campaign of awareness to make sure that people understand why the companies are here, what some of the threats are, what some of the challenges are, and what international business is and what it's not. We want to make sure that we change the dialogue from international business gets everything that it wants to international business gets everything that it needs to be competitive. We're in a very highly competitive world. The world's not just flat, but it's hyper-connected. And everyone is trying to replicate our business model. So we can handle some of the external threats that come our way. We've just got to make sure that we don't have anything that's self-made and manufactured in Bermuda. So some of the things that are really critical that we can all do is, you know, one of the things that's been really critical to our success is that we've had a free flow of high-quality intellectual capital to make sure that we enhance our prospects for innovation, because we've got a great track record of innovation. So any legislation that's potentially passed that inhibits the free flow of high-quality intellectual capital will definitely have negative implications for us in terms of our ability to be competitive. And having said that, that's not to say that we don't continue to develop the intellectual capital that we have here currently. And I think most of the companies are doing that. So most of the Bermudians that are employed in international business are taking full advantage of all the training and development opportunities that are available. The other thing that could potentially impact us as a country in terms of our ability to be competitive is if there's any increases in regulation that make it more difficult for us to execute in real time. That's been one of our advantages, because those who can deploy the capital the quickest are the ones who stand to make the most for the longest. And when you really think about it, one of the things that keeps me up at night is, you know, the exponential increase in the rate of change and the contracting product cycles. So if product cycles are contracting quickly, when you look at one of our advantages as a country in terms of, you know, what we're able to do in terms of getting our products to market quickly, the quicker we can get our products to market, the more we're going to have an opportunity to be relevant and to gain some traction. Other things that are really important are service standards. Any decrease in service standards are going to have real negative implications in terms of our ability to be competitive internationally. Other things that we should be looking at as well are things like adaptability. You know, we have to be willing to change and be willing to, you know, not be set in our ways and think that we've got it all figured out. The moment that we become insular with our thinking, that's the moment that it's all over. So, you know, we've got to be willing to be adaptable. And I think adaptability is the new competitive advantage. And Bermuda has had a great track record of responding to the opportunities that come from change. We've done a great job with that over the years. And that's something that I would encourage people to be very receptive to. The other things that are really important as well in terms of, you know, making sure that we remain relevant are things like political, economic, and social stability. I think Alan mentioned those factors as reasons why the companies are here in the first place. So anything that impacts that over a sustained period of time could have negative implications as far as why people would want to be based in Bermuda.
All right, let me bunt something off of you, Alan. Mr. Tanik said we have competitors out there without naming companies for obvious reasons. Which jurisdictions would you say are our chief competitors?
It's a tough question to answer without mentioning any names. But so I think you've got two.
I said
two,
don't name companies.
Companies. But I think there are two categories of jurisdictions out there. One is, if like, more of a like-for-like offshore jurisdictions with a favorable tax environment, I don't know, Caymans or other similar type jurisdictions. But I think increasingly, I think there is pressure from what I would call onshore jurisdictions, whether it's US or Europe or Asia, to move business back onshore. Mm-hmm. Whether that means if like the UK dropping its tax rate, or whether it's making sure that regulation across, for example, Europe is increasingly protectionist. And so there's definitely some challenges out there in terms of other countries, other jurisdictions, other regions, making it more favorable potentially to operate out of those jurisdictions. And that's why it comes back to Patrick's point. It is all of that stuff is going on anyway. So it's incredibly important that Bermuda, through its own actions, does as much as it can to keep facilitating this incredibly favorable and incredibly successful business environment.
So, Patrick, for the average Bermudian looking from the outside in, how can they tell that Bermudians are being developed in international business?
Well, we haven't done as good a job as we probably should as an industry in terms of getting the numbers out. It's not something that, you know, we have particularly embraced. We don't always like to toot our own horn, so to speak, because the situation could always be better. But the bottom line is that, you know, with respect to Excel in particular, my company that I work for, you know, we have 80% of our staff is Bermudian.
80%?
80%
is like Bermudian. Like 8 with a 0?
Yeah, 8 with a 0, and it's probably a higher percentage than that. And I can tell you that with respect to the Excel Bermuda operations, specifically the operations with which I'm responsible for, the leadership team there is over 90% Bermudian. So those speak volumes. Now, just to give you some perspective in terms of the numbers for the larger IB population based on a survey that AVIC did maybe a year or two ago, of the IB employee population, 37% of the executive management was Bermudian. Another 42% of senior management was Bermudian. And of the middle management, I believe 52% was Bermudian. And 63% of the technical staff was Bermudian. The companies are spending, you know, a lot of money in terms of trying to develop our clients, develop our people.
So, Patrick, with example, your company that you work for having 80% and other companies on a whole having majority Bermudians, how do we find, reach that nexus of Bermudians and internationals?
Well, I started my comments earlier in the interview by saying that part of Bermuda's success has been due to the fact that we've had a great track record of innovation. Mm-hmm. And when you think about international business, you're always going to have some internationals. And I think it's just a question of getting the balance right. And that balance is going to be somewhat fluid. You know, I don't have any problems with, you know, having internationals who have skill sets that Bermudians don't have. And so from my perspective, you know, you're always going to have internationals in international business. And an infusion of high-quality intellectual capital, and I stress that word, high-quality intellectual capital, will be critical for our prospects for success. And that's under the premise that, you know, the rate of change is changing exponentially, and sometimes we don't always have the skill sets in-house in Bermuda. So I think that, you know, we have to make sure that we have a balance and that we continue to invest in Bermudians in terms of making sure that they continually upgrade their skill sets to make sure that they're relevant and current. And I believe that most of the companies are very focused on making sure that, you know, training and development is an ongoing process for Bermudians so they can have the opportunity to, you know, continue to progress.
Because I think once you helped to enlighten me that at the end of the day, we have to present something to the world. Mm-hmm. They don't care if it's Chinese workers here, whatever nationality,
right.
As long as the end product is what is needed. Mm-hmm. And in order to do that, at times we need to have the internationals to have that real world experience. So I think I'm learning to appreciate more and more the need for having internationals mixed with Bermudians.
Well, you know, I think you're right. I think, you know, the world is not just flat. It's hyper-connected. Mm-hmm. And, you know, everybody's trying to replicate our success as a jurisdiction. Everybody's trying to replicate our business model. And I think I mentioned this earlier, that one of the reasons why we have been so successful is because in addition to having an enabling environment for the free flow of capital, which enhances our prospects for innovation and whatnot, we also have to make sure that simultaneously we have an enabling environment for the free flow of high-quality intellectual capital. Mm-hmm. And that we continue to develop our people here. And I think if we can get the mix right, then that will be a win-win situation for us all. You know, now having said that, you know, I think that there has to be also, you know, a better appreciation for the values of Bermudian culture as well.
by the internationals that are here. I think that's really important in terms of, you know, making sure that, you know, there's a good balance, and that, you know, international business does respect, you know, some of the aspirations of Bermudians in terms of, you know, wanting to go as far as they can go. So I think that, you know, most of the companies here, I can't speak for all of them, but I believe that most of the companies have good intentions in terms of making sure that, you know, they continue to develop the talent that is here by making sure that they have access to training and development.
You had said something years ago before you and I stopped conversing, mm-hmm. that has remained like stuck in my head.
Right.
Something about service or something like that.
Yeah. Well, I think in one of my earlier comments, I said something to the effect that one of the threats to Bermuda would be a decrease in service. Mm-hmm. And I just want to say for the record that Bermuda is a service economy, and that service, high quality service, does not equate with servitude. They are, mm-hmm. two completely different things. And that, you know, if we're going to remain relevant and competitive as a jurisdiction, we have to provide high quality service. And that's for me in my capacity in international business, and that's for everyone in their capacities in whatever they do, because it's all linked together. And whether the chains are big or small, you know, all those links in the chain all fit nicely together. So whether someone's driving, you know, a taxi, or whether someone is working in the hospitality industry, we all have a role to play. Bermuda is not exactly a cheap jurisdiction in terms of cost, and so we've got to provide a high-quality product. So to me, if there's any message I could give, it's let's not confuse service with servitude. It's all about economics, pure and simple. You know, our clients want value for what we are providing them. So if we can do that, that will be a key component of us remaining relevant and being competitive, and you know, people continue to want to do business with us in Bermuda.
So Patrick, explain to us, for the common layman, what do you mean by product cycle in terms to IB?
Well, I'll just break it down in terms of, you know, everybody's familiar with the iPhone, mm-hmm. okay? And, you know, sometimes people haven't even explored all the features on the iPhone 6 before they want the iPhone 7. So product cycles are the length of time that it takes from conception to the time when it actually gets to market, mm-hmm. of a product. And the products and the product cycles are contracting all the time. They're getting shorter and shorter and shorter. And so the implications of that are that those who can respond to change the quickest, those jurisdictions of which Bermuda is one, because we don't have as much bureaucracy as some of these other jurisdictions, and that was one of the points I think that Alan might have mentioned in his opening salvo, mm-hmm. was that you know, Bermuda has a very enlightened, enabling, but internationally credible regulator in the form of the BMA. In Bermuda, we don't have to file in 50 different states before a product gets approval. In Bermuda, we only have to talk to the BMA, and we can get a product to market extremely quickly. In other words, Bermuda has always had a very enabling environment for the free flow of high-quality intellectual capital. Mm-hmm. An enabling environment for the free flow of capital. Okay, so capital is able to be deployed very, very quickly in Bermuda, and that's one of the advantages that we have down here. We can deploy that capital extremely quickly.
Okay.
Before it becomes obsolete, because that's what the issue is that, you know, because people want the next big thing, right, then they're willing to move on to the next thing before the other thing's even been approved.
All right, let's talk a little bit about political stability, mm-hmm. just very little bit. In the last year, we've seen Brexit, mm-hmm. and we saw what that did to the value of the pound. A few weeks ago, we saw the election of the who we didn't think was going to get elected. What do we in Bermuda have to do to ensure that we in Bermuda have political stability that conversely allows this continuous free flow for international business?
Well, I think that Bermuda has had a great track record of political stability. I mean, we've had changes of government, and, you know, business has continued to go on, things have continued to happen. You know, people have spoken in terms of, you know, who they decide who the government's going to be. Mm-hmm. I don't really see that as a real issue, to be perfectly frank with you. I think we've had situations where people have voiced their discontent with certain situations, and they've done it in a peaceful, democratic way, and we respect the democratic process. I think that that hasn't really been an issue for us in Bermuda in terms of political stability.
Okay.
And political stability doesn't mean that you have the same party forever and ever, or you have the, it just means that whenever there's a change of government, then, you know, it's a peaceful change of government. One way or the other.
Alan, what are the external challenges to Bermuda?
So there are, unfortunately, quite a few. But before I get too glum, I should say that most of those are challenges that also contain some opportunities. So as many people will have heard about, there's a range of, you just talked about the political changes in the world. It's been a crazy year. Making sure that Bermuda is prepared to deal with the outcome of those political changes. So Brexit is going to have an impact. Potentially dramatically different US administration is going to have an impact in terms of the value of the currency, in terms of regulation, in terms of tax. And it's the same with Europe. Europe is going through an incredibly important phase, reacting to Brexit, but also reacting to some of those political trends that the whole world is seeing. And if that leads to more protectionism, that is something that Bermuda has to react to. And Bermuda is, through its location and size, incredibly dependent on equivalence, being deemed to be equivalent from a regulatory perspective, being deemed acceptable in terms of passporting in services, whether it's to the US or whether it is to the European Union, or indeed to Asia, Pacific region. So there's a lot going on at the macro level that Bermuda will have to respond to. And then you have, sitting to the side of that, what is a understandable yet concerning trend in the international tax environment, where there is a strong view, whether we like it or not, that jurisdictions that have lower corporate taxes are not competing in a fair and equitable way. And so you got a completely new international tax structures that are aimed to make it more difficult for companies to operate out of countries such as Bermuda. So all of that is going on, and companies are having to adapt. And so it is important that from a regulatory perspective, from a government perspective, the work that the Bermuda government has done over the past, I would say, 10 years on making sure that Bermuda standing as a tax transparent jurisdiction is incredibly important. Not what everyone would have wanted 10 years ago, to be frank, but the fact that they pushed ahead. And I believe it's somewhere between 40 and 50 tax exchange agreements they have entered into. And that means that Bermuda can go out and position itself as a highly regulated, tax transparent, well-organized jurisdiction. And that is becoming increasingly important in order to continue to be a jurisdiction of choice for businesses such as Fidelity and many others.
And how would you say, thank you for that, how would you... Patrick, how would you say that Solvency II has aided in this path forward?
Well, first of all, I just want to say, you know, hats off to the BMA. They've done a fantastic job in terms of getting Solvency II equivalence. But bottom line is that Solvency II, for us, levels the playing field. Prior to Solvency II, we were potentially at a disadvantage. And I think that Solvency II is probably the most material thing that's happened positively for the Bermuda environment in the international business sphere in the last, say, 20 years. So I think it's going to definitely enhance our prospects. We've already seen evidence of companies considering re-domestication to Bermuda, which is a real positive thing for Bermuda. In fact, the company I worked for was one of the first companies that's actually re-domesticated to Bermuda as a result of Solvency II. So I think it's a good thing for Bermuda. And, you know, hats off to the BMA. Those guys are to be congratulated on a job well done.
I want to touch on something that you mentioned earlier, Patrick. How are we, when I say we, the international business community, how are we developing local talent. Mm-hmm. Because it's all well and fine that we have all these internal threats neutralized and the external threats we are working on. Mm-hmm. How are we developing Bermudians? Not necessarily to replace guest workers, but to supplement that mixture.
Well, one of the things I said earlier, and I kind of prefaced my statement by saying that, you know, we have to have an enabling environment for the free flow of high-quality intellectual capital. Mm-hmm. But we have to balance that with making sure that we develop the capital, the intellectual capital that we currently have here. And by that, I meant the Bermudians. And we spend quite a bit of money on making sure that Bermudians get opportunities in international business to get the skill sets so that they can be competitive. And I think if you talk to most Bermudians who are in the industry, they are constantly upgrading their skill sets to make sure that they're relevant and current. There's a lot of misconceptions out there about the amount of Bermudians who are actually involved in the industry. And I think if you really take a look at the numbers, you'll see that there has been real progress made in the last several years. I think that, you know, there's still a little ways to go. But in international business, you're always going to have some internationals. And so I think that, you know, that balance will always be, you know, kind of fluid to a certain extent. But I think any company worth their salt will look to hire Bermudians. It's economically more feasible. But, you know, on the premise as well that the product cycles are contracting, I think one of the things we didn't talk about was the fact that, you know, unlike back in the day when you had a major catastrophic event and you'd see an influx of new companies coming down here and bricks and mortars and all kinds of jobs, that model is dead now. What we're seeing now is where you have groups of five or six people coming in for a finite period of time, maybe 5 or 6 years before, you know, that product becomes not necessarily obsolete, but they have to move on to a different skill set. So I think that, you know, I've gone around the bush in terms of responding to your question, but if you look at the statistics that we have on the progress of Bermudians in international business, it's definitely going in the right direction. And, you know, I don't have the, I'm still being taken.
Well, I did a piece a few months ago, and we have, on the totality of international business, we have over 50% of Bermudians. Mm-hmm. I think a third are in senior management. I don't have the finite number. But to add on to what you're saying, that we're trending up as far as Bermudians' involvement and upward mobility.
Well, I mean, we're doing a lot of things. I mean, we're giving scholarships. We're giving several scholarships a year to make sure that, you know, people get educated and have an opportunity to participate. But I'll say this, and I'm not trying to be negative or anything like that. What I'll say is that, you know, with technology, you can't underestimate the impact of technology and the amount of jobs and entry-level positions that are available in the industry. Mm. And underemployment is not unique to Bermuda. That's something that is global. So, you know, you will have some people who are highly educated who, you know, will be challenged to find jobs. But I think that the immigration department, both immigration departments, whether it was under the OBA or the PLP, have done a really good job in terms of making sure that, you know, if there are qualified Bermudians who have the right kind of skill sets, that they will be given an opportunity to participate and to go as far as they possibly can go. And that's not to say that we're in utopia right now, because we're not. But, you know, we're trying to do our best to make sure that, you know, it's a level playing field and that people get the opportunity to, you know, progress.
Let me throw you a curveball.
No. It was going so well.
In the 12 years that you've been here, you've seen countless, I won't say countless, but a number of other guest workers come. How do they feel about Bermuda, not just the culture, not just the people, but the environment? Are they sending out a signal to others that, hey, this is the place you want to come and domicile? This is the place you want to come and raise your kids?
That is a curveball, right? So I think it's important to understand that the answer to that question is not static. Mm-hmm. Right? It fluctuates. So when I came out here, I first came January 2006, and I was trying at the time to get my kids out here. All the schools were full, It was really difficult, and so they kept their education. They stayed in the UK. So you have, because the size of Bermuda, you got all sorts of dynamics and issues that when you come here as a work permit holder and to work for a few years, housing, schooling, all sorts of issues are relevant to whether you feel that this is a place where you can set up roots and stay for the longer term with your families. So you got some practical issues, and then you got some what are called more philosophical issues around political environment. And again, whether it is the OBA or whether it's the PLP, as the only comment I would make on the political environment is that everyone should understand that the rhetoric that is occasionally used is has an impact. And so the more constructive it is, regardless of political persuasion, the more everyone who comes here to live and work appreciate it. To the extent it goes a bit negative in the tone, that is something that, not surprisingly, that people don't react well to.
Yeah, I ask that because we started off the conversation speaking about the importance to the economy that international brings. And it's all well and fine. We talk about developing Bermudians. I love to hear that. My daughter's in university. But we also want to ensure that our guest workers feel at home here. We want other companies that, such as workers the BDA is doing, to say, well, let me re-domicile her or come here. So as this podcast is going to be heard all around the world, potentially, we want to be able to use this as a signal to say to other companies, hey, look at us. Don't look at Caymans. Look at us. So I just wanted to hear from someone in your position, how can we make things better for you guys?
Yeah, those are all of those points I said. The practical points, ease of getting a work permit, removing some of the uncertainty when you're having your work permit renewed. Those are emotional issues that are really important when you come here. You can argue, to some extent, international business has already had concessions made that have made some of those points easier to deal with. But it is that sort of emotional point or those emotional points that's a key differentiator. Mm. For individuals to come here. Mm. At the company level, you have all the other points, tax, regulation, but for people, it is feeling welcome, and people feel welcome when effectively they're told they're welcome and everything is made to feel make them feel welcome. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I understand, because although we're talking about a business entity, businesses are comprised of human beings. And you never know who steps off the plane to just come here for a vacation. We got America's Cup coming here. Somebody comes here, hanging out with Patrick. They go around Jamaican Grill, get a chicken patty. Tastes good.
Yeah,
they're like, wow, this is the best chicken patty I've ever had.
Right.
And they're like, bingo, we're coming to Bermuda. You know, so I'm saying all that to say that we speak of a lot of different things, but we don't want the common person to feel that they don't have a role in ensuring that international business stays there and grows. So that's basically.
You didn't want me to talk about people, but I have to say that emotional level, fitting into the community, mm-hmm. and being made to feel welcome, which is very easy in Bermuda. People are very open. Is the main differentiator.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't say it to be nice. It's a fact.
Yeah, I appreciate you saying that. So I just want to make sure that we have an all-encompassing message going out. This isn't about tiers. It's not simply about tiers or solvency too, but
it's about everything.
It's about international business is what?
Everybody's business.
International business as well.
Everybody's business.
All right. So on that note, gentlemen, I want to thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anything else you want to add, Patrick?
I'd just like to say thanks. I'd just like to say thanks to you for all the work that you're doing to kind of get the message out about international business and that we're not the bad guys. You know, we have certain needs that we have to make sure that we remain competitive in a highly competitive global landscape. And, you know, the challenges are tough. I mean, we've got external challenges, we have, you know, internal challenges, but, you know, I'm confident that our value proposition as a jurisdiction is extremely strong. And, you know, if we work together, collectively, collaboratively, then, you know, we can continue to be competitive internationally.
Thank you. Anything you want to end on, Alan?
I think we've said it all. But thank you very much.
Who's your football team?
Chelsea.
Arsenal, man.
None of you reinsure these guys, right?
Yeah, I know.
That's what I'm reinsuring from Manchester.
That's why we don't talk football. Yeah. We can't agree.
Okay. Yeah. So, Bermuda, there you have it. Another segment of why international business is important to Bermuda. Thank you, and look forward to the next part.
Thank you for tuning in to BernU's Current Affairs Podcast with Christopher Famous. Listen at your leisure on www.bernews.com, your 24/7 Bermuda news source.